highly entangled. I'm region with its complement. And so to each region of space, we have an entanglement entropy. So this is an interesting quantity in the number of contexts. It gives a quantum correction to the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, sort of its first incarnation. We understand that it's related to efficient representations of the ground state, certain algorithms used in condensed matter theory. It gives a nice probe, a sort of theoretical probe of the phase that your system's in, such as confining or deconfining phase, and even of topological phases. And recently there's a connection to, ABS-CFT as well. So, just to give a familiar picture, suppose we have a scalar field theory that we can discretize on a lattice, has some set N nodes, and at each node there's a Hilbert space. To each region of space, so a subset of nodes, we assign a Hilbert space that's just a tensor product of all the different Hilbert spaces associated to all those nodes. And so the full Hilbert space breaks down as a tensor product of the Hilbert space associated to our region A and to its complement. And therefore, to each region, we assign a density matrix by tracing out the complement, and the entropy of that density matrix, the Bernoulli entropy, is the entanglement entropy.
Good.
So now in a gauge theory, the picture is actually slightly different. So the states are not just any functionals on the field, but they are gauge invariant functionals. So they belong to this space of square integrable functions, L2, of vector potentials, mod gauge transformations. If you just had vector potentials, it would be very much like the scalar case, just with more components. And indeed, you would have this nice tensor product decomposition. But because of the gauge symmetry, there are constraints. So the canonical example is Gauss's law of electromagnetism, which says that the divergence of the electric field is zero. And because this is a differential equation, it doesn't act independently on the region A and its complement. It sort of gives a non-local constraint on the system. And you no longer actually have this nice tensor product structure. So just to show how this works back on a lattice, instead of having the sort of simple lattice theory that I had before, you can talk about a lattice gauge theory. So in a lattice gauge theory, you have degrees of freedom not living at the nodes, but associated with the links, the edges of your lattice. And now the states are gauge invariant functionals. So the canonical example of a gauge invariant functional is the Wilson loop. So you just take some sequence of edges that form a closed loop. You multiply the group elements along each of those edges together, and you take the trace in some representation. And that defines a gauge invariant functional. That isn't actually all the gauge invariant functionals. You can extend this to an orthonormal basis. And this orthonormal basis that you get sort of naturally from this construction is a basis of generalized spin networks. Instead of just having a single loop and a single representation, you now have a representation associated to every edge. You can also have branching of these of the loops, as you can see in the diagram. And at each vertex where you have branching, you associate an intertwining operator. The intertwining operators won't be particularly important for what I'm about to say. But the important thing is that the states have this graph-like structure. They're sort of spread out in this way, and there are representations associated to all the edges. So just to put it in maybe a more familiar context, if you just have a U1 gauge theory, like an electromagnetism, these representations are parameterized by integers, and they correspond to just quantized electric fluxes. So spin networks you can just think of as an electric field basis. So instead of the vector potential, instead of expressing a state in terms of the vector potential, which is a not a gauge invariant object, you express them in terms of the electric field. Right. And so now what's the main issue is that these states are not localized to the vertices. They're sort of non-local. They correspond to a whole loop. So if you consider, for example, a loop that straddles this boundary, and you try to break it down as a sort of tensor product in a tensor product decomposition, as you need to do to talk about the entanglement entropy, you'll find that the states that you have to write down on these regions are they're again loops, but of course they end on the boundary, and that's not allowed by Gauss's law. Gauss's law says that basically that these Wilson loops can't end.
That would violate gauge invariance. So
the solution to this is that we have to relax gauge invariance along the boundary. So if we want to even talk about the Hilbert space associated to a region of space, we don't put gauge invariance along the boundary. Now what that means is that because you've reduced the amount of gauge symmetry, you increase the number of states. So these new degrees of freedom that you get are called edge states. And these are actually pretty well known in several contexts. One of them is 2 plus 1 quantum gravity. In 2 plus 1 quantum gravity, you have no local degrees of freedom, but you can still explain the black hole entropy in terms of edge states similar to this, and also the quantum Hall effect. These edge states are responsible for a lot of the interesting physics. There's no sort of there's nothing interesting going on in the bulk. Everything interesting is on the edge. So those are topological theories, but these edge states occur also in any gauge theory. They're a generic thing. So now our states, our orthonormal basis is no longer spin networks. We have some additional degrees of freedom, and those correspond to representations that start at a node and go out to the boundary. And then we also associate a vector that I've denoted M here, a vector that just transforms in that representation. So now that the Hilbert space H sub A has been enlarged, it's still not true that we have an equality of this between the original Hilbert space and our tensor product, but we have an embedding into this space. And that's sufficient to talk about entanglement. Namely, we start with our gauge invariant state, we embed it into this tensor product, and then within that tensor product, we have a definition of entanglement entropy.
Yeah.
Now, what's nice is that this this symmetry actually comes with some simplification. So, remember, we introduced these edge states by breaking the gauge symmetry. And now our edge states transform non-trivially under that gauge symmetry acting at the boundary. Now it turns out, this is a representation of G to a power, where the power is the number of edges that cross our boundary. So it's the area of the boundary. And that symmetry restricts the form of the density matrix. So in particular, for every possible set of representations crossing that boundary, we have a sort of block diagonal where the blocks are labeled by that choice of representations. This is essentially a super selection rule that says that different sets of representations can't be in superposition. And then we have a actually could I use the point? Thank you. Which one? No, but it's a laser pointer.
Point. Use it like a pointer.
Thank you. So we have this direct sum over blocks, and then within each block we have a maximally mixed state corresponding to the m degrees of freedom. And the analogy is that if you have a singlet state, say of a j times j representation, that's maximally entangled. So the reduced density matrix is maximally mixed. And then we have another part which represents just sort of genuinely non-local correlations in the bulk. But now, because we have this nice form, we can use the properties of the von Neumann entropy under the direct sum and tensor product. And the entropy actually breaks into the sum of three different terms. So just to describe what those terms are. So the first one is there's some probability distribution in that state associated with all the representations on the boundary. And the first term in the entropy is just the classical Shannon entropy of that distribution. For non-abelian gauge groups, there is this factor of the dimension of the representation coming from that maximally mixed state that we had. And the point is that this is the entangled entropy of the edge states, and these terms are purely local to the boundary. So one of the interesting aspects of the entangled entropy is that under many situations, it satisfies an area law. I think it's even, it's a theorem in one dimension, it's conjectured to be true in higher dimensions. Here, you have one part of the entropy that just sort of automatically satisfies this area scaling. But like I said, there is also a non-local piece. So in principle, it could be much larger than area scaling. But I'll show some examples where this is actually a subdominant contribution. So one of the simplest examples that you can come up with is Z2 gauge theory. You just have two irreducible representations. There's a trivial representation, which you represent as no string connecting two points. And there's an alternating representation that you represent as the presence of a string. So your states just look like graphs with no additional information that you can call, that have been called electric strings. And you can consider the following unsat state where you weight each such graph with the exponential of the total length of electric strings. So this is an ansatz that allows you to vary between different states that are either peaked on very sort of long string configurations or very short string configurations. Now it turns out for this state, in fact, only the Shannon entropy term is non-zero. There's no non-abelian correction, of course, because the group is abelian. But also, there's no non-local fault correlations.
I'm sorry, is S the same thing in the model that's on it?
Oh, I apologize. No, it isn't. S in the top, that's a, my bad. No, the S in the top of the slide is S for spin network.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I'm glad that you asked. Yes, and then in the bottom, it's the entropy. Good. Now, in the limit as you take alpha to zero, that corresponds to these very long string states, what you find, you can actually evaluate this Shannon entropy, and what you find is a leading area law with a factor of log 2 that just corresponds to the fact that every representation is either trivial or alternating with 50% probability, except that because of Gauss's law, the total number of alternating representations has to be even because the strings have to end. So if the string goes in, it has to come out somewhere. And so because of that, the entropy is actually slightly lower. You subtract the number of components of the boundary. And actually, this is rather interesting. This number of components term corresponds to what's of interest in condensed matter theory in studying topological phases. It's the topological entanglement entropy. And in this case, it's given by 2 log 2. And in fact, in this limit, the state you're describing is the ground state of the toric code. Good. So another model of interest, of course, is Yang-Mills theory. Someone can consider the Kogut-Suskind Hamiltonian, which is a sort of discretization of the Yang-Mills theory. It has two terms, a sort of electric field term, which is the J squared Casimir on all the edges, and it has another term that creates loops. So in general, the ground state of this thing is a difficult thing to deal with, but we can look at just perturbatively the strong coupling limit, which means that lambda is small. So the ground state is just the what I've denoted zero, or excuse me, the ground state in the exact lambda equals zero theory is just no strings. As you go to higher order, you start to create very single Plaquette loops, which I've denoted by these boxes. And then there are higher order terms that involve two loops, three loops, etc. But at order lambda squared, the entropy, as it turns out, is given just by the Shannon entropy term plus the non-abelian correction. And you can obtain it just by counting the sort of different ways that a single Plaquette loop can intersect the boundary. So what's interesting about this is that we can actually obtain an area law in the limit of strong coupling. And the coefficient, as you can see, has a log. It's a lambda squared log lambda squared, which is non-analytic and mismatches with numerical results that people have found. Good. So, So just to sum up, the definition of what we mean by the entanglement entropy of a region of space in a gauge theory actually requires some care. And in order to describe a localized state, you need to introduce these edge states. What's nice about these edge states is that they have an extra symmetry that allows you to simplify the problem. And the entropy is a sum of three terms, two local terms, and one non-local. But the non-local one appears to be subnormal. So thank you.